When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Before we get started on today's episode, we just wanted to let you know how you could work with Made by Mamas as a partner.
If you listen to the podcast regularly, you'll hear that we love working with brands that we're really passionate about.
And that could be talking about a brand's fantastic products on the podcast to someone listening right now like you, giving a shout out on socials or even hosting an event for you.
If you're listening and you'd like to hear a bit more about how we partner with brands and how we could potentially work together, we would love to chat. Send us an email to mbm@insanityhq.com. That email address is also in the podcast description too.
We can't wait to hear from you. Now let's get started on today's podcast. Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. Are you going to talk first?
I was just going to say, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, George?
I'm all right. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm better than I was last week. I had a bit of a shocker, which I obviously, you know about George, but I wanted to share with everyone listening this morning that my mum has had a breast cancer diagnosis. And it's just been, I feel really emotional actually. It's just been such a big 10 days. I can't tell you. So driving back from work, 10 days ago, get the phone call from mum saying that she's found a mass, that she was waiting for her her appointment with the oncologist, which was going to be on the Monday. And it's just so weird because we've obviously just done this massive podcast with, you know, two amazing women talking about breast cancer. And then literally a week later, you know, my mum's got it. So anyway, long and short of it is, I feel like I was thrown into deep shock because it's never...
Well, it's shocking.
It's shocking, isn't it? Because you always hear, you know, we know that such a high number of people
it's
are
like
going to...
One in two or something.
But you don't really think that your mum's going to call you and tell you that she's got breast cancer. So anyway, I felt like I just went into a bit of a spiral and didn't really cope with life very well. But the good news is that it is stage two, which means that it's, you know, they've caught it early. And we found out on Saturday that it hasn't gone into the lymph nodes. So it looks like it's going to be a straightforward operation. She might even just have either radiotherapy or get away with taking a pill rather than having to have chemo. So I'll give you guys an update because you guys are so sweet and always involved. And I'm sure that some people listening are also going through this with their parents or maybe themselves. So yeah, anyway. That's why I'm not on the podcast today.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Because obviously last week, it's difficult when you've got to show up for a podcast and show up and be happy and, you know, all that when you've got stuff going on in your life.
Yeah.
That's why we always say it's so nice that there are two of us, because when that does happen, it means that, you know, I can pick up or you can pick up for me. And and obviously that's why Zoe is not on this recording, but we have caught up. And, you know, she's listened to the chat and it was a really amazing one.
Well, Georgia, hats off to you because Georgia is just the most brilliant interviewer now. Like, I mean, not that you ever weren't amazing, but genuinely, I mean, she doesn't need me.
Oh my gosh, don't be silly. Oh,
you did
God.
Such a beautiful job and it was a really, I've listened to the chat, it was a really, really honest conversation. I mean, wow, she really went there.
Yeah, and I think so often, you know, we'll have people on and, you know, we talk about lots, you know, lots of stuff to do with parenting and, you know, we're all open and honest, but sometimes you have a chat and you think, you step away from it and you think, gosh, that's really brave to talk that openly about so many things that are going on in your life. And also, it's very easy, isn't it, to be, you know, to talk on reflection when something's happened and you've come out the other side. But when you're still very much living through something, I can't thank our guest enough for just coming on and just saying it how it is. And I think that's actually the sort of was the theme of the interview, that she feels like she's shied away from being herself and listening to herself for too long. And now she just thinks, no, you know what? I'm just going to be me and I'm going to do what feels right to me. And I think so many of us can relate to it, especially when we become parents. Yeah. There's so many voices around us, family, friends, telling us what to do, reading books. There are so many opinions that it can be really difficult to think, hang on a minute, what do I actually think?
Yeah, what? Like, what's my opinion on something?
Do I believe
that?
Yeah, exactly. That was the overall theme of the conversation, I would say. Just to highlight, Amy came on and she was really poorly in the morning, but she was so keen to have the conversation. So at the beginning of the chat, her voice is a little bit croaky, but do stick with it because it does pick up after she has a nice hot drink.
Like George said, you know, she came on and she just said it how it was. That was what I took away from it, that actually being brave and being honest, being real, kind of putting yourself first and kind of thinking about what you really want in life. Wow, what a lesson that is. So I think we need to just get on with it because it was a beautiful conversation. Georgia, who are we talking? Oh, sorry. Georgia, who are you talking to today?
Today, I am talking to Amy Willerton. Yay! Welcome to the podcast, Amy. We are so happy to have you on. How are you?
I've been better, Georgia. I've lost my voice, which is a lovely thing to happen during a podcast recording, but we are powering through.
Powering through. And I guess I want to just take you back to, when you found out you were going to become a parent and how that sort of came about and how you felt. So let's go back. And was it something that you'd planned? Was it a surprise?
So it was a bit of a surprise. I found out I was pregnant just over a month after we got engaged. So it was very much a, you know, put a ring on it and then make a baby. But we didn't. We were more just having fun.
Yeah.
Celebrating getting engaged. But I think internally I'd started to get that twang of wanting a baby. Oh gosh, round 24.
Yeah,
I really started. I don't know. It was like something clicked in me. And I don't know if you ever had that, but like just suddenly my whole body was like, I need to produce offspring. I don't know why it just, and I couldn't even control it.
Yeah, I know. Do you know what? I totally get that. I'd actually always, do you know what? I'd never been one of those people who had said, oh, you know, I want to be a mom. I want to, you know, I want to have a big family. And then, I've been with my husband for a long time and we got married when we were 24. And I think when we got married, it's like almost I wanted to nest and create like a family. And there was a time when I thought I could have been pregnant. We hadn't been trying, but, you know, as you say, just having fun, celebrating being married. I thought I was pregnant for maybe a day. And then when I wasn't, I felt disappointed. And then I suddenly thought, oh gosh, this is it. This is the thing. I think now we haven't had a conversation about it. We'd never discussed it. But then I thought, okay, yeah, like this is it. This is me now wanting to become a parent. And I guess, were you both on the same page?
I knew I wanted to have one, but I almost was trying to curb those feelings. I almost felt like I shouldn't have those feelings because we were young and I almost started to get those feelings probably I don't want to say prematurely because you can't help when you start that way.
No, and I think there is actually such a stigma around wanting to have children.
Yeah,
like young or having those those maternal feelings when you are, you know, in your late teens or early 20s or whatever. There is definitely something weird about saying that out loud, and I think it's because not everybody feels that way.
Do you also think it's a generational thing though? Because I just think like we are probably the first generation that are told don't have children till you're in your 30s.
Yeah,
I don't think ever in history have we ever been told that.
No, no.
Some reason, if a woman is 23, 24, wants to have kids, she's weird.
Yeah, she's you know, she's got her whole life ahead of her, and she's, you know, she's wasting her life. It is really strange. And, you know, we're all so different, and we celebrate all of our differences. And yet that one thing just seems to be like, you know, you're odd if you want to have children young.
Especially in men. I think it's the men that almost like, and that's not an attacking thing on men. I think it's more just men almost, when they meet the girl they want to be with, they almost do feel like they have 10 years.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, well, we'll date for 5. Maybe yeah. We'll get engaged. Oh, and then we'll be engaged for 2 years, and then we'll get married. And that is something we're brought up that's perfectly normal. Mm. And then it's like a woman's body clock is saying the opposite, because
there is, yeah, there you don't have the time always.
We're walking on two different paths here. A lot of people are feeling quite alone in when they start to feel as a primal instinct that they want to have children.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And so what were they, that's got, like, I guess the kind of feelings that you were having with your, you know, then fiance, that he thought he had 10 years and you thought, no, actually I want this now.
Yeah, I mean, I actually, there was a period, like, we'd been together about 4 years, and I sort of really was feeling quite deeply that I wanted more. And the reason I wanted more is because I felt good in the relationship, and I felt like, oh, this is something that I want for my life, you know. I feel like when I aired that, it was very much, that's not what we do. This isn't, it's not what I want. And I actually broke up with him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I actually had a period of where I broke up with him, because I said, you know what, maybe I need to find somebody that does want that. Because actually, I kind of came to the conclusion, because this wasn't over a short period. This was over about 2 years of me saying, I think I want more. I think I want more.
Mm.
Not even I think. I was like, I know I want more.
Yeah.
And then you almost start to think, well, at what point do I say that that I kind of keep putting to my feelings to one side? How long do I do that before I'm actually just being cruel to myself?
Mm.
If you're not aligned with somebody, what do you really truly have intimacy with them? If you don't, if they can't, or at least have some understanding of why you want that. And it's so difficult. It's so difficult, because how often do we find two people that want the exact same thing at the exact same time?
Yeah. And like you say, there are so many elements to a partnership, as in, like, can you have intimacy if you don't want the same thing? I'm sure, you know, you can love somebody and you can really get on and you can have a relationship, but can you have that absolute, like, you know, sort of beautiful, intimate relationship if you're not on the same page? Probably not. And, you know, there's always going to be, I guess, differences in opinion. So you mentioned you you weren't on the same page. So how were those, you know, you found out you're pregnant, and then you're starting to sort of piece together how it's going to work and what your life's going to be like. How were those first, like, few months? Because I know it wasn't a straightforward few months at the beginning.
To be fair, like, when I did tell him, he was really lovely and he was supportive. It was more later it came out that he wasn't ready, if you know what I mean. He more, for me, supported me at that time. We had a difficult time during the pregnancy, only at one stage in it, about halfway. I loved being pregnant. I found that whole experience just fascinating, and I loved it. But I had a bit of, I guess, trauma in my family, where we have a bit of a history of people having disabilities in my family. So I have a disabled brother, and I have cousins who are disabled, and that was kind of on my mind. And I just felt like, I feel like I have the ability to do tests to find out if there's anything. And actually, the woman I am now probably would have just been like, no, like, don't even put it in your head. But the woman I was then was a bit of a worrier, and I felt like I had to know. And actually, what came out in those tests is that we were told that our daughter had this rare chromosomal disorder that would mean that she wouldn't live past infancy. And this is what I was told when I was 5 months pregnant. And I was so distraught by that. That I, you know, I really was going in my head thinking, okay, what do I do here? Because now that I've been given this information, I've now got this impossible choice because I've grown up with a disabled person. I know the realities of it. It's not easy. You can paint it saying it's all going to be fine. It's really not easy. It's a life commitment to caring for somebody, you know, and that has a lot of responsibilities. Of course, it's the same with being a parent, but I think it's very anybody who's experienced that will know it's not the same. Yeah. It's very different. It's you take being a parent and you intensify it by 100, you know, and I actually, like, it was not easy to book a termination because it was, you had to wait a long time. So I remember I had to book it in just in case that's what I decided. So I had that date in. I even had them tell me how it was going to work and everything like that. And I felt so guilty, but I was really determined. And it was weird. There was something inside of me that felt like there's something not right here. This doesn't make sense to me.
So did you consider having a termination? Was it something that, you know, you considered?
So my human brain, logically thinking, having experienced the difficulties of living with a disabled person, crossed my mind, But my heart felt that that wasn't enough. I didn't think it was something I could go through.
Yeah.
And being, like, being completely honest, and I can't believe that I'm about to share this, but I feel it's important because I think there's a lot of girls that go through the same thing. What set me off wanting to become a mother was that when I was, and the reason I brought up LA earlier by accident was because that was where my motherhood journey really started, was when I was living in LA and Dan was living in the UK. And basically, I accidentally fell pregnant many years before.
Yeah.
That I'd never even thought about. Parenthood seemed so far away for me. I was TV presenting on a music channel, living in LA, loving my life, driving my little convertible Mini Cooper along the Pacific Coast Highway, no worries in the world. I was doing long distance with a man I adored, but I certainly was not thinking about becoming a mother. Then I got pregnant and I found out very early, but it was like in a thunderbolt. I suddenly was a mum. Mm. And even in those early stages, and I didn't know what to do. And I remember calling Dan and saying, like, and he said to me, well, you can't keep it. And I was thinking, but everything in my body is like, this feels right, even though everything in my outside world is like, no, this is wrong.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I do not blame him, and I'd like to make this clear, I do not blame him, but I remember feeling out of guilt because I hadn't planned it and I felt irresponsible that this had happened in an environment where I hadn't planned it. Mm. I felt like that having a termination was something I had to go through, that I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
And I don't blame anybody else for that. I had internalized those feelings in just the world around me.
Yeah.
That's something that I ended up doing. And it really killed a part of me.
Did it?
Yeah. And I think for the next few years, that's when I was like, no, actually, I want to change my life. I want to settle down. I want to have kids, because those few weeks where I was pregnant, it felt so right to me.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think it's definitely, you know, something that so many people go through. I've experienced it. And, you know, I know, you know, lots of friends and stuff who have. And it's definitely something that people don't talk about. They definitely don't talk about it. You know, there lots of people have different views on it, and that's absolutely fine. I mean, for me, it like you, wasn't the right time. I mean, I actually ended up having children with this person, like as you did. But my life would be very different if I had done that. And whether that's selfish or not, I'm not sure. And for me, it was definitely the right decision, and I know that. And that there's almost a taboo around that, because I don't feel guilty. I actually don't feel guilty. I think I feel quite detached from it, as in, I know it was the right decision. It definitely wasn't the right time. I actually don't feel guilty. Like, I don't feel guilty about it. I am comfortable with it. But then when I thought I was pregnant, and then I felt disappointed when I wasn't, that is when the moment clicked for me. I'm a different person now. I am, you know, I'm a mother, even though you know, I'm not. But yeah, exactly. There is that feeling.
There is a moment as a woman where that does kick in though, right?
Like, yeah, I think so.
You can control it. And that for me was when I accidentally felt pregnant for the first time. I don't know the whole circumstance of obviously everything you and many other women have been through, but I know certainly for me, I didn't feel like I made the choice for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's why I hung on to it, because I remember feeling like, wow, I was so quick to feel like I'm in the wrong circumstances. Of course, I can't do it. That actually I ignored the way I felt.
Yeah. Yeah.
I ignored the way I felt.
Yeah.
And then after that, for the next 2 years, I'm there telling somebody I want more, you know, because, and I almost feel like I'm deserving of more because I've made that decision for other people.
Yeah.
And actually I was in control, but I didn't realize I was in control because I hadn't really learned to take personal responsibility at that stage, because I was only, 23?
Yeah.
No, and I didn't know.
Yeah, you didn't know you actually had that choice, and it was actually your choice.
Yeah. So 2 years of sort of asking for more, eventually realizing he's not wanting more. Mm-hmm. So I broke up with him. I was sad because I wanted to be with him, but then I was like mourning kind of the relationship that I had in my head. But obviously at the end of the day, you can't force somebody to want more than they want to give. It's not fair. But then actually we did get back together and he did propose, and then I just completely lost myself in a love bubble and end up pregnant.
So you mentioned that you'd been told that it was likely that your daughter wouldn't survive past infancy, and that you did consider maybe a termination, but your heart was telling you not to. So how did it come about that actually she didn't have any issues?
Sheer willpower on my part. I just, there was some part of me that was like, I just don't think this test is correct. And a lot of people said that I had false hope because this test is very advanced, and I just said, I need to do further tests. There's something not right here, because I also think on some level, maybe across my whole life, that maybe I had manifested that situation, because why was I profusely insisting on having all these tests? Like, oh, I've got all these disabled people. Of course, you know, I have to have
this. Because is it the Harmony test? Is it the Harmony test? No.
I paid for like the full whammy of whatever you can test.
Yeah. Because quite often, I think if you do it on the NHS, you don't have that test until you're a certain age, maybe, is it? Or they don't really... I don't know. I know people who've had it done, but it was never something that was really mentioned to me. But
no.
I know lots of people who have, who have done it, but I don't know what they're like.
Yeah, they only offer a test for Down syndrome, from memory.
Right, okay.
I don't know exactly what the full scale thing is, but I know I saw
you went
out.
For,
I went and had it. I remember them calling me saying, oh, everything's fine. There's just one last test we're waiting for. And I was 5 months pregnant. I still hadn't told my mum and dad or anyone, or his mum and dad. No one knew.
You were 5 months pregnant?
I hadn't told anyone.
Wow.
And so it was mad, because once I was told, oh, 9 out of 10 tests are fine, I told everyone. I told my mum and dad. I hadn't publicly announced it, but I told everyone. And then the day after I told my mum and dad and everyone, I then get a call saying that last test has come through and there's something wrong. And we were living in Spain, and the doctor said to me, you need to fly back to London today or tomorrow because there's a problem with your tests. And my heart was like, you're kidding. You know, I've just told all my family, thinking they're all clear. And then there's one test that's come back with something that's deserving of us to fly back there that same day.
Oh my gosh.
And then when I get there, and then they tell me, and it's mad because my brother, he's got this 1 in 50 million chromosomal disorder that's so rare that nobody else in the world has it. And then you're telling me my daughter also has a 1 in 50 million random occurrence of a same, not the same, but similar chromosomal disorder. My head just was like, no.
I
think it's just, how on earth can that happen?
To the same family, yeah.
Or at least, is there something here we don't understand yet?
Mm.
So anyway, once they told me, I went into utter despair. As I said, I had to brook in this termination, which I really didn't want to do. But then I also... really went through in my head and thought, well, can I cope with losing a child? Can I cope with a termination? Possibly, but can I cope with losing a child? I don't know if I can. So that's why I had to take those precautions. So I went profusely online trying to find a really good geneticist who was specialized in this condition. I felt like even though I'd gone private and paid for these other tests, no one could really tell me anything.
Yeah.
I felt like they were delivering these results, but really they were just kind of like, we recommend that, you know, you probably terminate the pregnancy. And that's kind of what they would say based, you know, it's weird because of what I'd been through before, where I'd gone completely in my head and just thought about what everyone around me was telling me and I hadn't listened to myself. That experience allowed me in this circumstance to go, no, I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to listen to me. And what is me saying? What's my heart saying? And it was telling me, you need to know more. You cannot take action until you know 100%, you feel it in your body that this is the right decision, and I didn't.
Mm.
So I found this wonderful geneticist based in Newcastle, and he was the first person that talked to me like a mum, like a human being, and had compassion and actually was like, let's get to the bottom of this. There are other tests you can do now that you've encircled what it is potentially. Like, let's go with that and let's do other tests and let me submit your results to other laboratories. And, you know, it was expensive that's not something anybody recommended to me. That was just me.
Yeah.
Very, very determined that I needed to know more. And I remember it took like another two weeks to get these further test results. And all in the meantime, this termination date is coming closer and closer and closer because I was obviously 5.5 months pregnant.
Yeah. So the cutoff is, yeah.
So I was there thinking, I'm getting closer and closer to this day. And it was really scaring me. And then I was in Spain. I had a flight home the next day where my termination was booked. And the night before, I got a call from my lovely geneticist saying, tests are in, she doesn't have it.
Did you know? Did you know already? Or was it a complete?
I wouldn't say I knew, but I knew there was a part of me that would not accept the news to take action. Do you know what I mean? There was just part of me that I was just like, no, I can't move forward because I don't believe in this. I believe that maybe I think I've created this scenario. Do you know what I mean? It's like, because it just seemed too impossible. It just seemed too impossible. And I have a wild imagination and the things that appear in my life are wild. And as I got older, really believed in the power of manifestation, because sometimes I'm like, whoa, there's just no way that would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he told me and I said, well, can I rely on this? And he was like, Amy, he said, I've done 3 more tests. He said, all of them are saying no, it's only your original test that's saying yes. He said, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but he said, if it was me, I would be relying on this. Because he said, we've gone more detailed into what it is, and they're coming up negative. They're not saying she's got it. So I think you should feel really confident. And I was just, I can't even. I have pictures of me where I woke up at sunrise the next morning, And I just was just dancing with happiness, because I just, after this month of just hell, and it was only my gut that was saying no. Everyone else, doctors, everyone's telling me, don't, you know, this is impossible, don't continue the pregnancy. It was literally only me, slaved all night on the internet, finding somebody that I felt could help me.
We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh.
Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
I actually think it's really important because I think until you're in a situation where you're told that there could possibly be a problem with your baby, it's very easy to say, you know, I wouldn't consider, I would react this way, or, oh no, I would never terminate, or, oh no, I definitely would terminate. It's very difficult to know how you will feel in those situations. I haven't ever, you know, been through that, but I don't know how I would be. I've got no idea. And I think, yeah, I think it's incredible that, you know, you trusted your gut and actually it turned out to be right.
If I hadn't been through that circumstance where I had allowed myself to make a decision based on what other people were telling me, I don't think I ever would have had that strength in myself to go, no, I'm not going to do that again. So actually, in a way, as awful as that situation was for me over that time, I think if I hadn't been through that, my daughter wouldn't be here today. I really don't. Because I got so much strength from that scenario. Because I was like, never again will I make a decision about my body that's not come from me.
Yeah. And how, you know, after that, how were, you know, the first few months after giving birth?
Oh, honestly.
Honestly, that's what we like on this podcast.
I was gutted about the way my birth went, if I'm honest.
Oh, really?
And I really spent, I was so happy when she arrived and I was so just, you know, elated at the miracle of life. But I'd been on a bit of a journey with my own sort of birth story where I'd, you know, I was born by a C-section and I remember my mum was like, yeah, no, in our family, our hips aren't big enough to give birth, so we have to have C-sections. And so I remember when I, you know, when I talked about to the doctors, I was like, I have to have a C-section. And that was almost just like what I thought.
Yeah.
And that was all I knew about birth. And actually, it was the doctor that was like, you know, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, like, of course, like, that's totally normal, right? And he was like, it is actually not. Like, he was like, maybe you should go read some books and come back. And thank you to that doctor, because I ended up reading Siobhan Miller's The Positive Birth book. And wow, I got so much from that book, because it really was, again, all about that journey of learning to trust yourself. Mm. And so I became the flip opposite, where I was like, I'm going to have her at home. I'm going to be this earth mama.
Yeah.
And I turned the bedroom in my apartment into an absolute zen den.
I love that.
Zen den of birthing heaven. I mean, there was not an incense candle I didn't have. I hope I have videos somewhere, because you've never seen anything like it. My Amazon box, where I ordered everything that you could possibly order. I went totally overboard. And then when it came down to it, I just didn't know really what I was doing. I had all the gear, no idea.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't done that internal work to learn to trust myself. So when I really got into birth, like I was at home in labor for 3 days.
Ooh.
And I was so like, I'm going to have this home birth. But when it came to that point where, as a woman, and you're giving birth and you have to let go, you have to let go. You have to let go of any conceivements of who you think you are, who you think you should be, because you have got to birth a human being. You've got to let rip.
Yeah.
You know, and I got to that stage and I couldn't do it. I couldn't let go. I wanted to hang on. I didn't want to expose myself in that way, even with a midwife and my partner. I couldn't let go, because I didn't even know how to let go, because I'd spent my whole life being this perfect person that didn't have a clue how to do that. And so I concentrated so hard on all the things I needed, but I never actually really went, well, what's all the stuff inside of you that's not letting you let go? Yeah. And so I, after 3 days at home and no progression, the midwife was like, look, you need to go in. But I'd almost terrified myself so much about induction that I felt that I didn't want to do that. So I almost got in, was like, if I can't have my home birth, just take her out, you know?
Yeah.
But, and I did that in that moment. But I look back and I'm like, oh, what were you doing? But it's fine. It was my birth journey. But by the time I gave in, I was so tired. I just didn't care anymore. I was just like, take it out. Like, yeah. It was like that. I can't actually watch my birth video without getting really upset because I just...
Really?
Yeah. And so I think when I first became a mum, I had this sort of guilt that I'd given up. I felt guilty about giving up.
It's so strange that we do that, isn't it? That we... we think that we have to birth in a certain way, and if we don't, then we haven't done it the right way or the proper way, or because it's so different, because in different cultures and in different places, different births are the norm. So like, one of my friends has just had a baby in Singapore. I mean, her doctor looked at her like she was completely crazy when she first said that she didn't want to have a C-section and she actually wanted to have a vaginal birth. He was like, but why would you do that? Because it's dangerous and you don't know what it's going to be like. This way, we can plan it. Whereas in the UK, if you go in and say you want to have a planned C-section, they look at you like, well, why would you do that? You haven't even given it a go yet. It's so weird.
It's so weird. It's so weird. And again, it all comes down to learning to listen to ourselves again, kind of the theme of this. Do you know what I mean? Because I listened to my mum with the C-section.
Yeah.
Then I read the book. Then I went way too extreme the other way, where I didn't really know what I was, because it's all good, like telling a woman to trust herself. But did I really trust myself?
How do you do that? It's so much easier said than done, isn't it? If you haven't done before.
I know how to do it now.
So how have you come to feeling like this now? Because you're talking a lot on reflection, now you're piecing everything together. What was there a time, has there been a pinnacle point recently that has made you, I guess, reevaluate?
Yes. The last year of my life. So I'll skip ahead, but I ended up locked down with Dan and his family for 2 years. Mm. And during that time, I just felt like I was completely powerless over the way that I mothered, because I was living in a house with so many other people, again, giving me their opinions meaningfully, not in a bad way. But I just remember feeling like, I don't know how to listen to what I'm feeling, because I feel like everybody just wants to tell me all the time what they think and I can't hear myself.
Yeah.
And after 2 years of that, because it just went on too long, I left Anne and I said, like, I need to go be on my own, because I just, I don't know who I am, because I'm a person that I feel is made up of everyone else's opinions of what I should be. So when we split up, we sat down and we said, right, where do we want to live? And we both had spent majority of our time in a relationship in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So we agreed we would live in Spain. But I said, you're going to think I'm mad, but I want to go live on Ibiza. And he was like, what do you mean you want to go live on Ibiza? I was like, I just think that so Ibiza is only 2 hours by boat from the mainland. And I said, I think I need to just get an apartment and on my own. And I just need to be on my own. So we made an agreement that basically I would live in Ibiza, I would have Demi for a week, and he would have Demi for a week. And we, over the whole summer, that's what we did.
Wow.
I moved there on my own. And when I had this idea, I Googled, I found an apartment, I saw the apartment I wanted, and I went, that's the one. I'd never even been to the town. I didn't know where it was.
Oh my gosh.
And I just said, I just need to go and be on my own. That experience over summer changed everything for me. It was not easy.
No.
I finally learned to be by myself and to learn how to tune into myself. And actually, obviously every month was different. Every month was very, very different. The first month I didn't really go out a lot. I was just at home with Demi, kind of just getting around this idea that I was on my own for the first time in my life, and I was on my own emotionally, financially, everything. I was completely, there was no one to turn to,
And so in the, in those weeks, you said you'd have like 1 week with Demi and then 1 week on your own. How does that feel? Because we've spoken about co-parenting on the podcast before and how, different setups work for different families. And I guess when I think about it, I think it's almost like switching roles. Like, 1 week you are in your mum role, and then the next week you're in a different role. And so how did that feel like going from one to the other?
It was really difficult to begin with, because of course my head as a mum was just like, how on earth can I commit to spending 50% of my time without my child?
Yeah.
I had no idea how to even comprehend that. Like, it was like the most awful thing to me. But at the same time, in order for me to live in Ibiza, that's what we had to do, because we couldn't be traveling every 3 days. And
yeah, of course.
And so I had to get my head around that. But actually, as I started to get used to it, I realized that, you know, I was mum for a week and then I was Amy for a week.
Yeah.
And actually, oh my God, it meant that I was so much a better mum when she was with me, because I did all the things that I wanted to do for me, I did in my week without her. And then when she was with me, I was just so engrossed in her world and I was so present with her. And actually, my guilt started to go, well, actually, how many parents get to be 100% present with their kids?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how many parents get to do that? So I actually really thrived on it, because I would... You know, she would come to me, we would go to the beach, we would go to our little favourite cafes, we would go to the park, we would do all the things that we love to do together. Then on my week off, I would be like, I would go to women's circles and I would meditate and I would do yoga and I would go to stand-up paddleboard club and I would go on hiking groups and I would meet people and I would have adult conversations. I stopped drinking and I stopped eating meat when I went over there. And I learned so much about like my body, my inner world. Like I learned, and people are very into their kind of inner world and consciousness over there. And people are very like, nobody ever made me feel guilty for my circumstance. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone always was like, wow, that's really powerful what you're doing on your own, you know? And actually, for the first time in my life, I didn't feel like a bad mum, even though I was on my own half the time. I didn't feel like a bad mum, because the only time I felt like a bad mum was when I was in an healthy environment where I didn't feel that I could express myself. And therefore, it was my own internal that was telling me I was a bad mum, because I wasn't feeling good inside myself. I didn't feel like I had a lot to give as a mum, because if you don't fill your own cup,
yeah,
I'm resentful giving from an empty cup.
And I think so many of us feel like that. I know that, you know, I've tried to not try to be a stay-at-home mum, but I've been at home with my children like for I think it was about a year, maybe 2 years, and honestly I really didn't enjoy it. I really didn't. And I'm so much better when I have time away from them. You know, my daughter's at preschool 4 days a week. We have someone look after them in the afternoons. My son's at school, obviously, 5 days a week. And I'm so much better having time away from them, because like you say, like I can do things for myself. I can work. I can feel like me. And then I have the time with them as well. And I don't know why, you know, anyone would think like that it was a bad thing to do something for yourself. And because like ultimately, what do you want for your children when they're older? Do you want them to give up everything for their? No, of course you don't. You want them to be happy and you want them to be themselves. So why would we not lead by example?
For me, I think it's a generational thing again. Because I think my mum's generation and her mum's generation even more so were told to be a good mum, you have to give up everything that you
have. Yeah, you have to be completely selfless.
You know, when I tell people my story, a lot of people are like, well, you know, how is that possibly good for the child? And I said, because I know when I fill my own cup with the things that make me feel happy and alive, I show up for her in a completely different way.
Exactly.
But again, it's really difficult. And I don't blame people that have this view of you must give up everything for your child.
No, gosh. And if it makes you feel happy, then that's what makes you happy.
Mm. No, there's no right way. There's right way of doing it. But the only thing you have to do is build resilience to the fact people aren't going to always like your way.
Yeah.
And I think that's why my situation became so unhealthy, because in lockdown, I lived with Dan, his mum and dad, his grandma, granddad, their family lawyer, a load of people that work for them. And I was just constantly surrounded by people, all of which had an opinion on the way that I should raise my child. And I was not strong enough in myself to be able to go, that's your opinion. This is my opinion. And I wasn't strong enough because I felt like, I don't know what I'm doing.
And you're at your most vulnerable, aren't you? I mean, you've just landed a new role that you've got absolutely no experience in.
And I don't resent them for that, because at the end of the day, the only reason they were telling me is because they care.
Yeah, they're trying to help. Yeah.
It's more just like, I look back and think, okay, yes, I was vulnerable as a mum, but, you know, as me, as somebody who's had this successful career, modelling, you know, I've had a lot of self-accomplishment in my life before I became a mum. If I feel this broken and so unsure of myself, what the hell are other women going through?
Yeah.
And I've had so much reassurance in my life of, oh, you're beautiful, you're this, you're that. You know, I really went through, well, if I become that vulnerable and I take on that much of others' opinions and I still don't have that strength, even with everything that I've done in my life, and like anytime I meet a strong woman who's like got a foot in the ground and she's like, this is me, this is how I do things, I'm always just like,
yeah.
I'm so for that. I'm so for that, because it's not easy to find that.
Just before we finish up, we always ask our guests for the best piece of advice they've ever been given as a parent, or a piece of advice that they would want to give another parent. I feel like you're going to have some.
It's the running theme through all of this. Learn to listen to you. Tune out to tune in. You know, turn your phone off for an hour each day. Meditate. Like, if you can, like, set an alarm, like, to wake up half an hour before your child. So you give yourself half an hour just to really tap in, like, how am I feeling? How you know, where am I at in my life? Where am I going? And am I happy with how things are? And if I'm not, what can I do to maybe add some little things in to change that and make that a daily practice? I think it really does change. Your internal world will change everything, because when you show up with a good mindset, I believe everything else turns out a lot better.
I love that. And we actually like to hear what products our guests love. So are there any brands that you particularly love for Demi or for yourself? Is there anything that, you know, you absolutely swear by? Any apps that you use for meditation? Anything like that?
Always having a good stroller, of course. A Leclerc stroller is the one I use. It folds up, folds in like magic. I love that one. I use Insight Timer, which is just like a meditation app, but all it does is really, it just gives you a nice little relaxing boing, and then, you know, and then it boings again when you've done. So I use that. I also use, I think it's really healthy as a, like a mum and woman, to use like a period tracker. Like I use natural cycles and I don't take contraception, and I highly recommend that, because I think, again, going back to that internal work, when you start to really understand your own body, it really helps you on those days where you like wake up and you're like, I don't know why, but I'm crazy today.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
And it's mad, because as I've been using natural cycles, I'll go on my app and it'll be like, just so you know, you're going to be more emotional today because you're at this point in your period. And I'm like, oh, thank you. It's really reassuring.
My God, I need to go back to natural cycles. I did actually use it for a little while and then I just stopped using it. But I didn't know that you got all that extra information as well. That's amazing. Mm. Oh my God, I should probably get my husband to download the app as well.
Women are like the moon. We're always in different stages of our cycle. Full moon, half moon, new moon, and actually our bodies are made up of 70% water, and the moon controls the tides, you know. So when everyone doesn't think that where the earth isn't connected with how we're feeling, I mean, it's madness, because we know as a fact that we're made up of water, and yet we ignore kind of the nature that's going on around us to actually be able to apply it to how we're feeling inside. There's so much to know. There's so much to understand. And yeah, I'm just super passionate about learning to understand ourselves better. That feels like my personal mission in life right now.
I love that. Thank you so much. We could have literally chatted to you all day.
Oh, thanks, Georgia. Thanks for having me.
I feel like I want to give her a massive hug.
So do I. When you put it all that out there, all of the things that she's been through in such a short space of time, it's amazing, you know, that she's still battling on through, because it... even individually, lots of those things are so tricky to navigate. Like, imagine being told that you're going to have a disabled child and that they potentially won't even make it through infancy. Mm. So the likeliness is you're going to have a baby and then they'll die within the first few years of being alive. Can you imagine that? And then being told, oh, no, actually, she's going to be fine. I just can't. I don't know. I actually really don't know what I would do in that situation.
We've actually had that conversation quite a lot, just the two of us, haven't we? About, you know, we count ourselves very lucky in a way, because we never faced that. There wasn't that conversation. You know, we had our Harmony tests, or I think I waited for the 20 weeks scamfully. You know, everything was fine. I haven't had that moment where it's like, is it not going to be okay? Is it going to be okay? You know, a friend of mine, she gave birth, and then when she looked down at her little girl, she was like, my little girl's got Down syndrome, and they didn't pick it up on the test. And then, but she'll say it's the best thing that ever happened to her, you know. So there's all, yeah, it's such a minefield.
It is, I know. And I do, like, I mean, Amy's got a disabled brother and other people in her family with disabilities, so she knows the reality of, like, what it's actually like and how, you know, much, how difficult it is for a family. And I don't know, at 26, you know, when I was pregnant with Axel, had they have said to me, you know, you're probably going to lose this child in the first couple of years, I don't know if I would have been able to go ahead with it. I really don't. I don't know now, like, you know, when you get older and you kind of, you've met more people and you've spoken to more people about these situations.
Thank you to Amy. Thank you for coming on. And Georgia, well done to you for handling that on your own. Before we say goodbye, we would love to talk about our live event, which is coming up on Thursday, the 8th of December. Our big first live podcast taking place in London. We've got tickets still available. We would just, yeah, we really want you guys to be there. We don't want you to miss out on it.
We would love you to come. It's at King's Place, which is near King's Cross. We've got an amazing goodie bag. We have got a really great lineup of guests, and we are going to start announcing those over the next couple of weeks. But I really would urge you, if you're thinking about coming, just book a ticket, because I think as soon as we start announcing the guests, especially, they're going to get snapped up.
Yep.
And we, you know, that's it. There aren't, you know, that there is one date at the moment, and so if you can't come to that, then that's it. You're going to miss out.
yeah, exactly.
So yeah, do it. Round up your mum mates, your dad mates, whoever, your husband, anyone. Bring anyone.
Yeah, or come on your own.
Yeah, come on your own. We're going to put a group together of people who are coming on their own. So if they want to meet for a drink before, then you can. But yeah, it is going to be a really fun evening.
And we need to talk about the goodie bags quickly, because we are currently pulling together all of our favourite beauty, wellness, kind of makeup brands. Food going to be in there as well. So just some like something lovely for you to take away. The goodie bags alone are going to be worth kind of around the sort of £80 marks, and the tickets are only 25. Yeah. So yeah, a really good night out for you and some mates. We will put the link up in the show notes, but also across our socials as well. If you click on Made by Mamas on our Instagram, you can get it in the bio there. And as always, please rate, review, subscribe, and give the podcast a little follow.
Yeah, and if you've got any suggestions for guests you'd like to hear from or topics you'd like us to cover in the Friday Q&A, then please drop us a message on @MadeByMamas on Instagram, and we'll be back on Friday. Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.